Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And Holly.
Holly.
Holy Holly.
Holy. What's going on, guys?
Oh, you know, just having some M&Ms and some wine and talking to you awesome dudes about Star Trek.
And take two.
That's an amazing combination.
Yes.
Speaking of M&Ms...
Dave, we got news on Star Trek.
We got news?
Yes, we got new news. We got Axanar is back in production. So Axanar, in case you don't know, about 2 years ago, there was a fan project that came up on Kickstarter was Axanar, which is based off the character Garth of Izar, who we see in Whom Gods Destroy in the original series. Don't run off with Marta's legs, that's right. And this takes place during the Federation Klingon Empire War. And right during that time, Discovery kicked in. And
it was in pre-production.
Yes, but it was like dealing with the same kind of storyline, even though
we had no idea.
Right. And there was a huge legal battle. Divided fans got people really pissed off because people really loved what they saw with Axanar. And then some people were siding with CBS and Paramount saying, hey, it's their IP. They can do whatever the hell they want. And they basically shut it down. And so it did shut down for a while. But lately, I noticed that they've been putting in my YouTube feed, I've been seeing production videos coming out. And I was like, oh, these are old videos? And like, no, they're within a couple days. So yeah, so they're back in action. I don't know how this works with the legal issue of it.
Well, the way the fan film guidelines came down was it sounds like you can make 2 15-minute videos. So I assume that's what they're doing if they're following the guidelines. I don't know. I mean, Star Trek Continuous was able to kind of continue on with what they were doing.
Yes.
And they made full-length episodes even after the guidelines came out. But they've had a really good relationship with CBS. And apparently, you know, the other people didn't because the lawsuit came down on them. But
yes, yeah. And Star Trek Continues, obviously, at the very end, we saw them kind of promote Discovery.
Yes. So even had the Discovery in the very last episode. Granted, it was the original preview model of it, but it was there. It was a nice nod.
It was a little nod to it. So they were kind of acknowledging that timeline. So, yeah, I don't know when that's going to come out. They're still building bridges and doing set stuff. So if you want to check that out, you can go to their Axanar YouTube site and you can see what they're putting together. So that's exciting. I did like Axanar, actually. I liked a lot what they did. I thought they could have maybe worked better with CBS and Paramount, but apparently that wasn't in the cards at the time.
Yeah, there's lots of ins and outs of it. If you want the super detailed stuff, check out the Trek Geeks channel, which I'm sure many of you already know about them. But if you look back a year ago when all this stuff was going down, they've done extensive episodes on that stuff, and they got up all in it with how like the legality and stuff of it. Cause they paid for Axanar. Like they gave money to it and expected certain things, and they were disappointed that, you know, the stuff that happened with it. So they got way in the weeds on it, way more than we ever did.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was some exciting stuff at the time, especially back in 2017.
Yeah. It looked like a neat prospect.
Actually,
I look forward to looking at the videos.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's some cool... If you watch the original trailer that came out, and they have some, you know, I'm not going to say huge talent, but they're like big actors.
They had Richard Hatch, but he passed away.
Yeah, he did die, yeah, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, it was an exciting time. There was a lot of fan films coming out, and at the time we had Captain Pike...
Yeah.
That we were a little part of, but that never got made. And then we also had
Phase 2 stop. The one with Khan's daughter. I can't remember what that was called. Yeah, Renegades.
We reviewed Renegades.
We did review Renegades, and then
it was a bit of a hot mess.
And then episode two like never came out, or it got changed to something else. I never looked at episode two. I don't even know if it came out. I didn't keep track of it because they unbranded it from Star Trek, so it doesn't even make any sense how they're making a second episode of it when they totally unbranded it from Star Trek. So yeah, I'm just like right. Only reason I wanted to watch more of it was to find out why she's Khan's daughter. How the hell did that happen? Frozen space seeds? we did our episode maybe. Spicy Space Seeds, so maybe there's a frozen space seed we don't know about.
Do you have an episode called Spicy Space Beads?
Space Seed. Because we joked when Khan was like trying to get McGivers to give him a blowjob that he ate a lot of hot Indian food.
Oh jeez!
Yeah. Because he's Indian.
Yeah.
So
that's why we called it Spicy Space Seed. We're digging back. That was back when we recorded at our job we met together at. So that was a long time ago.
That was a very very long time ago.
Three or more years ago.
So Captain Pike was episode 15, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
And. I'm trying to figure out where Spicy Space Seed was. And then episode 11 is when we had Walter Koenig Chekhov on the episode.
That's cool.
Yeah. That was our biggest appearance, I think, on the show. I mean, as far as like original Trek actors go. We did have Nichelle Nichols talk to us at Nickel City Con, which was pretty cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Oh, Wrath of Khan. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Spicy Space Seed was episode 21, if you can believe it.
Wow, 21? Yeah. That's so long ago. It's 170-some episodes ago.
August 1st, 2015.
Good gosh. We've been around the block a couple times, guys.
A couple times. Yes. But so that's interesting. I want to see Axanar. I want to see what they do. I think they had an excellent vision. Everything that I wanted to see about the Klingon War, I think Discovery kind of gave me a tummy ache with the Klingon War.
Because you wanted more and they didn't give it.
Because they ignored the Klingon War the entire time.
Yeah, this was all about the Klingon War. So,
gotcha.
So cool stuff. But we also have the newest Discovery short, the Brightest Star.
And you guys have actually seen Calypso, so you guys can commiserate with me now on that.
Well, Holly said she liked Calypso.
Yeah, Holly, I didn't hate it.
Why did you not hate this?
So I thought it was interesting. Sorry, I was
so did Dougie.
I think he needs to go to the bathroom and he keeps asking. But no, I didn't hate it. I'll go when Aaron talks about Calypso.
You'll go to the bathroom?
No, I'll take Yeager downstairs. I don't know. I thought it was interesting. It was, it's like another movie. What is the other movie that it's like, though?
It's
Passengers. It's like Passengers.
It's basically the Odyssey in space.
Well, I don't know. All I kept thinking about was Passengers. I didn't even consider.
I've never seen Passengers.
Space Odyssey. I don't know. It was neat. It was kind of pointless. Yeah, because it left you wondering why the ship was there, why no one else was there. They made a point to mention how long no one has been there, but they don't talk about why they left, or you don't learn anything about Discovery. You just like follow this random character, and I don't know if it was meant to kind of give you the idea that the ship is going to have some kind of personality or not. I don't know.
Well, it developed a personality while everyone was gone, so I mean, I don't think it's going to have a personality in the show.
You think it would be the opposite?
She said that it developed, but she had a lot of time to learn how to do more things. Like, for instance, you know how you said that she shouldn't have been able to actually care for this guy. Well, she could have somehow developed a way to do that. So I don't know. It was interesting to me. But it left way too much unanswered stuff.
That's my issue with it. I mean, these short treks should tie into the main story somehow. I mean, otherwise they don't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the first one, I don't think the first one's going to tie into anything either. I mean, maybe, but I don't think so. This one definitely doesn't. And then Saru's The Brightest Star definitely will. They're supposed to visit his home planet in season 2. Although they did say they were going to explain why the Klingons had no hair in season one, they never did. So I don't trust much of what CBS says about the show.
Well, you know, people were kind of irritated that everything was about Michael. So these short treks are could just be a diversion tactic to get you to consider the other characters.
Oh, it would be a great diversion tactic if they were good.
It's touche. Touche.
Aaron, what are your thoughts on Calypso? I didn't super like it, so you can commiserate with me.
Unless it ties into something, like one of the broader arcs, and it fills in some piece, you know, season two or maybe beyond that, I just find this, I don't even understand what the point of this actually is. Just that Discovery, somehow the ship survives almost 1,000 years into the future. And, you know, there's this, you know, odd guy that shows up and they feed and clothes him and just essentially sends him back on his way. I don't know. It's I didn't really see what the point of it was.
Yeah, I mean, if it tied in somehow, some way, but they didn't drop any names or anything. So it just was like, why does this exist the way it does? I don't know. It just, apparently they never used the transporter set because they used the transporter set a lot in the Tilly one and on this one. So they're very underused sets because basically the way they just were like, oh, what set's not being used? What actors can we get? And they just kind of filmed random things on them.
Yeah, it had some interesting editing, you know, how they kind of like told the story. But besides that, it didn't really do anything for me. I just was sort of just left like, okay, I don't know what this is about. I don't know how this ties in. I'm hoping that it has a, like I said, a bigger piece of the puzzle later on, but I just don't see what it would be. I was just left. I just walked away from it being like, okay, I don't know what that was.
Yeah. It was weird. Not great. So the third one is arguably the best one so far. The brightest star.
Interesting. It has a lot of interesting points to it, but I have huge bones with it.
Oh, I have lots of bones to pick with this episode as well. So basically the setup of this episode is it shows about Saru's origin. You see the Kelpians, and guess what? They harvest kelp. I face
so strange.
I face palmed at this, that they were harvesting kelp. I'm like, come on. Like, couldn't that just be the name of their planet? That it was actual kelp that they were harvesting, just kind of.
But that's how things are named.
We're not Hamburgerins.
Hamburgerins.
or Pizzains. Or
if
you know,
if you're from Germany,
we're humans, which is like
a Schnitzelwiener. Like, I don't know.
I don't know how Homo sapien came about, but
we're not Wheatians. We don't like because we harvest wheat. I mean, like it just. I don't know. It just.
It was a simpler time.
Maybe it was a joke.
I facepalmed.
Think about how, I mean, I don't have any specifics off the top of my head, but like certain species are named for their environments or their climates.
Yeah, usually like non-intelligent ones, like bugs and like other things. Like these are an intelligent, you know, living race that, you know, has communications and they're sentient beings. I feel like it's kind of insulting for sentient being to be named after.
Well, before we get into like... what they eat.
Sorry, it's the first thing you see in the episode pretty much, and it facepalmed, and it just was so distracting, it made me kind of upset.
Just real quickly, if you haven't seen it, we're just going to get into just the breakdown of the short. So it takes place with Saru on his home world. We get a kind of a scene, they live very simplistic, they live on the land, they go out into the water, and like you said, they harvest kelp or some sort of seaweed type of plant, and yet they have a ritual, so almost like a religion, where they have to go and they get, people are kind of chosen from some sort of lottery, and they just go in, they go around the circle where this upside down obelisk is, and those people disappear. I'm assuming they're beamed up, but they're
beamed away somewhere.
But they're supposed to be eaten or something. They're food. And Saru's father is like a priest or some sort of religious figure, and he's all about the balance on the planet. And Saru has questions though, and doesn't seem like Dad is too interested in answering his questions. Mm-hmm. And at some point, something off a ship falls off, which has some communication ability. And Saru, being a genius, figures it out and figures out how to communicate to people out into the stars.
Good thing that thing had enough screens to spell hello.
Well, yeah.
I think, wow,
that's super inefficient.
I think a bunch of pieces from the ship fell because when his father asks him to dispose of it and that it's, you know, off limits or whatever, right. it just seemed like, well, you know what to do with it. So I think he had been harvesting all these parts from the ship and he built it.
So he does. He puts out some kind of communication, and at some point he obviously makes contact with people because they answer back. And him and his sister go hiking up into the mountains, and she says, "Well, I want to go back," and he says, "I want to keep going. I want to look at the stars." And she goes back.
Look at the ground sometime, because sometimes there's pretty things that grow in the dirt.
And, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong.
No, I'm just making fun.
I know.
But
like butts are near the ground. Those are kind of nice to look at.
But what are?
I said butts.
So a shuttlecraft comes out of the sky, and it has Lieutenant Giorgio. So she's not a captain yet.
When she was a strapping young prime directive breaker.
Yes, and she decides. She decides to take off with Saru.
She's an alien abducting the native species, and she's gonna anal probe him because that's what aliens do when they abduct you.
I guess. So
I am rolling my eyes and shaking my head at you right now.
So the episode ends there. So what do you guys think about this episode, The Brightest Star?
It was the best of them, but I feel like they totally, like, everything Saru has said about his race has totally been misleading. He's like, we're hunted, we're always scared, we're always on the run. And like, they just live in a village, they don't go anywhere. And they just wait to be beamed away to Hunger Games or wherever they go to be hunted. And it just seems like, oh, you just exaggerate about everything you ever said about your own race. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was my take on it. And then Giorgio coming and abducting him, it feels like a very Sharjanka situation where it's a non-warp race and she communicated, like, their pen pals, like that whole Next Gen episode. And I'm like,
Like,
why didn't Next Gen know about this? Like what? It just seems weird because, like, it seems like Data's like, oh, it's kind of cool doing this because maybe he did it because Giorgio did it. Who knows? But it rubbed me the wrong way that, you know, Saru's whole race was not Prime Directive. But it's kind of nice that they did explain that away because that's why we never see any other Kelpians ever in Star Trek again, which is something we don't usually get because usually, like, the Nobelans, like, we never see a Nobelan ever again.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of weird.
Right. Holly?
So the name didn't bother me.
The title, you're all right with it.
Also, I don't know. I didn't think it was a bad episode. And what Dave is saying about how you were led to believe that the Kelpians work like cattle. The only thing that makes sense to me is that he knows something that we don't. So when everyone was going into the circle and disappearing, to me, I felt like, okay, slave trade.
Which means they're basically slaves in the mirror universe. I mean, slaves is probably right.
Right. So my rationalizing the whole thing was that, yes, it is a primitive society and they are maybe unaware of what they're doing. And while every day they fear that, they don't know if they're going to be taken off. His description of them being quote-unquote cattle and, you know, it could just be from what he learned after he left, because he could have learned the truth about where they go, and that was just my brain rationalizing it. But, yeah, I didn't think it was a terrible episode. I liked that you saw his father, and you saw that he had a sister, and the rational thought of, this isn't my place anymore. I should go with you, strange being.
I think it's great. She's like, you know, if you come with me, you'll never be able to come back.
And he saw such a kind side of her, and I loved it.
And he's like, does that mean I'll only be able to bang aliens? I'm cool with that.
I think more of it was like he was just like, yeah, get me off this rock.
Yeah. Well, you know, it could have... It could have just been self-preservation because he didn't want to be sacrificed.
But the thing is, in the episode with the tree stalk, where he goes crazy because he becomes at peace for the first time in his life. It's like, yeah, he's always scared of everything. Why would he go with Giorgio? It just seems like that would
because
be scary.
Because he was just
the unknown.
His dad
is super scary.
But his dad literally was like, well, if it's your time to go, it's your time to go. And he was like, fuck that.
It's my time to go off this planet.
Right.
But,
I'm not letting
but still,
my
like,
dad
wouldn't that have, but what I was trying to say is, like, wouldn't that even like reduce his fear since he's no longer the prey on this planet? And granted, they don't seem very much like prey. They just seem like they get Hunger Games like once a day.
Hmm.
Well, what about you, Aaron?
Okay, so first thing I thought, obviously, like you said, we knew the Kelpians were hunted. The only thing I thought, maybe they were hunted before, and this is more of an evolved form. Like, they just beam them up now, and they're just like, oh, now you'll be processed into the abattoir, and you'll go through the spinning blades, kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like yeah, I mean, think about it. If we could just have cows, let's say we kept eating thousands of years in the future, cows become sentient. And we are out in space, but we just still love those goddamn hamburgers,
I haven't quite figured out the replicator yet.
Yeah, and we're just like, hey, you live on your planet. We won't slaughter you because we're way more advanced. And basically what we'll do is part of your religion is every, couple, weeks or every couple months, we pick a couple people out of your township and we beam you up and we eat you, and we won't take everybody, obviously. We'll let you it's sort of like free range cattle. So that was my thought, and maybe that's different. I'm assuming all the things that Sru said about, like you said, about the crystalline stalk and stuff like that,
what
that we saw
beams
before
the mirror universe and Emperor Giorgio is eating them.
Oh, that could be a thing.
That'd be hilarious.
That could be an option, actually. So the first thing that caught my mind with this was back in the 1940s, there was a short story in The New Yorker called The Lottery, written by Shirley Jackson. It was well known. It's about basically an American town where people, the families at one time of night meet, and they get they have to take slips. And if they get this black dot, the black spot, basically their family's been chosen and they're killed. And so this was like a sort of a famous dystopian, piece of science fiction back then. It's a famous story. Anyways, that's what I thought about. It's like, but instead we just put a religion to it. The idea that, we draw lots and whoever gets picked kind of thing. So that was my first thought of that. The second thing, honestly, that Saru could find that equipment and make it work seemed totally ridiculous to me. I mean,
they're basically cavemen.
Yeah. It's like we see no evidence whatsoever that they have any higher form than other than reading and writing, some tool making and stuff like that. Obviously, they have clothes, so there must be some kind of weaving, and they have fishing nets. I don't know. It was really hard to swallow. And then lastly, Giorgio taking Saru is a huge, huge issue with the Prime Directive. I mean, it's just like, honestly, do these people even care about what Star Trek even talks about?
Well, the TOS era is fast and loose with the Prime Directive, more so than, TNG. They're more strict about it in TNG area.
I know. We did our whole Prime Directive series, which you can go back and listen to, where we break down every other episode and where they break Prime Directive. And our consensus is basically that the original series, they didn't have a clear idea of what the Prime Directive was about yet. They had an inkling of it, but they were kind of forming it as it goes. By Next Generation, it became like more of a, an established rule.
An established idea, sort of.
Right. So, but this really pisses me off. It's just like, it really does go against the Prime Directive. And I don't understand even the thought behind it. So he assembled some, so basically you have a brilliant mind on that planet, And why wouldn't they leave that brilliant mind to figure out other problems, like, you know, invent a better way to, you know, farm kelp?
How to be chewed by the monsters that'll eat me.
How to escape the monsters. How to, you know, basically be the Martin Luther of your race and put those
95 theses.
Yeah, put that 95 theses up on the church door and say, hey, this is bullshit.
They want to use him to their advantage.
Yeah, but that's the point. Is the Prime Directive is non-interference with anybody who's pre-warp.
But so you're talking about the Prime Directive, but isn't like, I don't know. I was reading a lot the other day.
Oh, go ahead, Ollie.
For some reason, maybe I just read way too much the other day and I'm super confused, but have they even established like the Federation yet?
Yeah,
at this point, yes.
And they established it at the Enterprise. Enterprise is about 90 years before Kirk.
Okay.
Or 100 years before Kirk, give or take. And this is like 20 years before Kirk, since she's not a captain yet, probably.
Gotcha. I mean, and like Giorgio says, I had to make a lot of like... I break a lot of rules, or I had to, like, you know, basically do a lot of things to get the shuttle down here to pick you up, kind of thing. And it's just like, if Picard was willing to sacrifice some of his crew member for the Prime Directive, which he doesn't actually do, but he always says he's going to. But I mean, it's just like one of those things. You're like, well, if he was saying that, I don't know. It bristled me so bad. I really got so angry.
Is it possible that she's lying and she took the craft without anyone knowing it? Because it looked like she was the only pilot, like the only person on board.
You're right. She could have been. She could have been the person who, like, you know, said, you know what, this guy's too brilliant to leave on that, you know, hunk of rock with those bunch of idiots.
Well, I wonder if the race that eats them is warp civilization. So she kind of bent the rule because maybe they share the planet.
Holly, that would be like that'd be like you, like, kidnapping the smartest cow in a farmer's field.
Holly, we need to videotape you stealing the smartest cow.
Like the cow that, like, can understand, like, letter reading and writing. You'd be like,
it does sign language. Fuck. It's a sign language cow.
Holy fuck, this cow is brilliant. I'm taking him.
Holly, this needs to be on YouTube. So if you kidnap the sign
Holly
language,
just like walking around fields testing the intelligence of cows.
Like, show me the letter A.
In California, there's got to be lots of pasture out there.
You know, actually, that'd be an excellent movie.
The sign language cow. Sign cow. Cal sign. Anyways. All we can call it cal sign or cal xing.
Anyways, great. Yeah, the show, it by the end of it, I was just like, I threw down my remote in fury and I stomped out of the room.
The thing with the short tracks is I really hope they aren't indicative of the quality of season two.
Let me just put this out. I mean, other than my disgust with the Prime Directive, the production was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason why the production is so good is because they are supposed to be going to Saru's planet in season two at some point. So maybe one of those red angels are on Saru's planet or nearby, and they just go
freak
for
him
a
out.
Visit. Maybe, yeah. And then he'll see his sister again. His sister and his dad have to show up again because their makeup was just so good. It's too good for a 15-minute short. So they must have been cast for the regular show and you know, been fed for all those prosthetics, because that's just got to be way too expensive for like a 15-minute episode.
I could see that. Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
But how would they have gone all of this time and not been sacrificed?
Because they're the religious family. They're the one, they rigged the elections.
Well, they shouldn't be exempt.
They're the Donald Trumps of the Kelpian world.
They don't have to follow
those rules.
You shut
your mouth.
No.
So,
and the Hillary Clintons of the Kelpian world.
Well,
so
I guess it would.
We can equally bag on both sides.
There you go.
It doesn't matter. It just basically it's a well done episode. It's just a bullshit that they just walked away from Prime Direct, or they maybe you're right, Dave. Maybe she got like hugely reprimanded for what she did. You know,
maybe who knows?
I don't know. Yeah, we don't know. So maybe this will tie into all these short treks, and I'm assuming they must tie into the season two somehow.
I hope so. I hope so. But who knows?
Yeah.
But speaking of things that make you throw on your remote control, this week we're talking about Neelix, our favorite Talaxian.
Oh, not Neelix.
Aaron, you forced this upon us, actually.
I did, because I hate Neelix, and we've done Voyager before, and a lot of times I avoid Neelix episodes, so I picked this one.
So you felt it was so due. Bent over the table waiting for the doctor to do the prostate exam. Just do it. Get it over with.
Just do it, please. So, yeah, so this episode we are talking about Gentrell. This is Voyager Season 1, Episode 15, and it first aired May 15th, 1995. So we get a cool scene in the beginning with Neelix and Tuvok and Tom Paris playing a pool in a pool hall. And,
with floaties and rubber ducks?
No, not that kind of pool hall. Billiards.
Yes.
Playing billiards. And Tuvok makes this whole thing like, I can make this shot, even though Neelix gave him this terrible shot. I just got to bank it off this bumper and I'll sink it in this hole. And then Tuvok scratches so bad. It's hilarious.
Insta scratch. He doesn't even bounce off anything.
Yes.
No, I mean, it didn't go straight in. It did like wobble, like it went from one corner to, it hit a corner and then it hit the other corner, but it still went into the hole.
Yes,
to the pocket. Like it did. It wasn't straight.
Holly, do you,
it's close
do you,
enough
do you shoot pool?
I like pool, but I wouldn't say I'm good at it.
All right.
Dave, Aaron knows I'm terrible at pool. Why'd you ask me that question? We played pool at that place we met. The place we met, and we worked.
I do shoot pool. I'm not very good at it. I just
you're better than me, though.
I am better than you. Yeah, I'll say that. But that's only by small degrees.
Well, you're a pro compared to me, because I had a hard time hitting the ball sometimes.
Yeah, that was interesting. I actually forgot about that, to tell you the truth, that we played together.
We should have all done that when I lived up there. That would have been fun.
That would have been great.
I actually.
You'll have to make a special trip out here just to do that.
When you come back up, we should shoot pool and we should all do karaoke.
That'd be fun.
Yes.
I would think that'd be hilarious.
Aaron also sings better than me, so it's more things that Aaron's better than me.
It's all going to be
great. I'm going to be all coming up Milhouse.
You made a Simpson reference?
That's the only one I know.
Wow. That's beautiful.
And apparently I made it correctly, too.
We can shut off this podcast right now.
This is the last episode of Synthaholics, guys. I hope you weren't looking forward to more Discovery talk. One Simpsons reference and we're done.
Yes. So anyways, in the pool hall, after Tuvok scratches terribly and blames the ship stabilizers, Janeway calls Neelix to the bridge, and apparently there's a shuttlecraft heading their way, and this creature or alien called a Harkonian is on the shuttle, and Neelix
looking for Neelix.
And looking for Neelix in all the wrong places, and all you get, Janeway, is ugly faces.
You haven't returned my calls, Neelix.
Yes, so
the Harkonian, you left me for that little girl. She's only 3 years old.
That's dark. So the Harkonians were at war with the Talaxians, which is Neelix's race. And this is something we don't really know much about Neelix. We find out that the Harkonians basically obliterated one of their moons that Neelix lived on, but he happened to be away at the time. So they shot a weapon of mass destruction on their moon called Rinex. And it sounds like a drug you take if you're incontinent or something.
One of your rectal glands not working right or something.
Yeah, exactly. So
just like Talaxians.
That's right. So once the shuttlecraft comes into view, it is Dr. Jetrell. And Neelix obviously knows who he is, but he doesn't tell anybody. And he just storms off the bridge into the turbo lift and very upset. And we're just like,
pouts.
Yeah, we're like, who the hell is this guy?
It looked like he was going to shit his pants to me, but that's just me. So angry, he's going to shit his pants.
It's probably his cooking.
Oh, probably, yeah. That makes more sense. He's getting a bad case of diarrhea right when he saw the guy. That's why he stormed off.
So after, the commercial break, Janeway catches up with Neelix, and he tells her that Gentrell was a mass murderer, and basically he's the guy who destroyed one of the beautiful moons that they had, that his family lived on in Rinex. It was a device called the Metron Cascade. It's a weapon of mass destruction.
Basically, it's an A-bomb.
Yes. And this weapon was devised by Dr. Gentrell.
And so Neelix holds him wholly responsible for everything about the accident, even though he was just a scientist.
Right, exactly. So anyways, after this attack, there was like this basically ash cloud that enveloped the world, and all these people were dead, and this beautiful moon that had a temperate climate is turned into like a nuclear winter.
And it's all nighttime all the time.
Right. More than 300,000 people were killed instantly. And then there was tons of people who were killed on the, other after effects of the weapon. So Gentrell says basically that he believes that because that Neelix was on the moon after the explosion, that he might have been exposed to this disease, which is from the Metron Cascade.
Some Metrion emission radiation that would eventually turn his blood poison and kill him.
Right. So his cells are going to disintegrate. And that he has designed this special equipment that's going to detect the disorder. And he's doing this as a study to find a cure. And he asked for Janeway to kind of just like, I know that Neelix doesn't want to talk with me, but maybe you could get him to see, you know, to see me.
See reason.
Like, see the light. Yeah. And then, like, there's this great scene in the mess hall where they're talking Neelix into it. And, like, it's great because, you know, back in the day, TVs were, like, this tight 4x3. And so, so both Neelix – so both Janeway and Cass are, like, grinding on Neelix to get him to go see Jetrell, basically.
Grinding!
They're so close to him. I'm just looking at the screen. I'm like, wow, that's super uncomfortable. But it's the only way to fit them all on the screen.
The only thing I could get past to this whole scene – the whole scene was that he had the baker's hat on.
It's good to be the cook.
I was like, dude, take that baker's hat off. You're not fooling anybody.
He keeps hiding his boner underneath his hat. Oh, he's got Janeway and Cass grinding on him.
Well,
so I'm outflanked and out.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's what it just looked like to me. I don't know.
So Janeway lays it out, said you might have this disease because you were on the planet or on the moon after this weapon of mass destruction, and he just wants to test you. And he basically says he wanted to be far away. I think he said he wants to be 10 parsecs away from him. But anyways, Janeway and Kes talk him into saying, just get tested. You know, it might be nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So next thing,
peace of mind.
So the next scene, we have Voyager in the briefing room. We have Gentrell, and he's talking to Neelix, and Janeway's there. And Neelix just asks him point blankly, like, why are you doing this? Like, what is your motivations? You already did a terrible thing. And they have this huge exchange about, you know, his motives. And then also the idea of that. It was interesting, just Gentrell just basically says somebody was going to come up with this Metron
cascade at some point. It was an inevitability of our scientific research.
Right. So
it didn't just matter
who's going to find it first, and we just used it first. But, and it wasn't like, and he's like, I didn't choose to, you know, to use it. It was our government, our military leaders. And Neelix says, I hope that makes you sleep at night or whatever like that. So,
but Aaron, my question is, I just don't know how Gentrell didn't commit suicide after talking with the first two Talaxians about this. Because if they were all as stubborn as Neelix, that would have ended it right there. I'm like, nope, I'm not even going to try and help them anymore.
Super dedicated to right his wrong.
Yeah. Right my wrongs. Right my wrongs.
Like,
so.
If something will drive you to suicide, it'd be arguing with a Talaxian about the same thing over and over and over again.
So Neelix is basically, find another laboratory rat. I'm not going to do it. But Gentrell says to him, says, look, I might not be able to, you know, make you feel any better about B, but maybe we can find a cure for other Talaxians for this disease. So maybe we could work together. And this changes his mind. So Neelix accepts. We see Neelix next in the sick bay, and he's running tests on him. And he tells Kes a story about basically about some rodent that he caught.
How he tortured it.
And how he tortured it, and it was screaming, and in this, and he felt bad for it.
It was an allegory for the race that nuked his people.
Right. Right. And then Ed Gentrell says, "Are you finished?
Are you done?"
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, for now.
I'll but think of another terrible analogy later.
Right. But Gentrell later says that yes, you have this you have this disease. So because of the weapon of mass destruction. So next scene, we have Neelix is in his quarters and Kes comes to visit, and he kind of puts on a brave face. This is interesting about Neelix, that he keeps on trying to play the Pollyann.
This tough soldier person for
not
for
even Kes. Tough soldier. He tries to be not even tough soldier. He tries to placate the people that are worried around him. It's like a coping mechanism, you know.
He's got good intentions, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's good intentions. It's maybe misdirected at some point, but he says, you know, I was facing down a. He was telling about a battle that he was fighting these Harkonians.
That he wasn't actually at.
Yeah, and Kes kind of like
said, ruin the whole story, David.
You're welcome.
But Kes says you're trying to protect me, and says what's the point? He says what's the point of this? Like we should have to you know we're right now under duress. We have problems, and you're
under duress.
Duress, and you the have to, you know, and we should face it together. And actually, it was a sweet scene between the two. I don't really like Kes with Neelix because I think it's creepy.
It's very creepy.
But I did like that she was like, you know, let's. Basically, you know, like if you were ever diagnosed with disease, that she's like, let's work on this together.
She's a supportive significant other until an alien infects her body, breaks up with Neelix, and then never addresses it again.
Well, you know, exactly,
because logic doesn't really follow in Voyager very goodly.
So we've got that great scene, and
Jatrell becomes obsessed with Voyager's technology. He's super fascinated about the transporters, and he talks to Janeway about them so they can go back to Talax and beam out the stuff from the planet to fix Neelix.
So if they go back to the moon where he put this Metron cascade down, they could maybe take some of these Metron isotopes out of the atmosphere, and that he could use that to filter out the disease, and then Talaxians would never have to worry about the disease in the future. So, which, you know, I guess it's a pretty nice thing.
He's trying to fix Talaxians. I mean, it's good, but... he's got alternate intentions, apparently.
Right. So Janeway being the eternal optimist, and you know, being a scientist, is fascinated with his research. Work. Yeah, and she's like, yeah, let's do it. So she, you know, she decides to go to the Talaxian system, and Chakotay's like, that's a long detour. Ways away. She's like, do it.
But they get there in 5 seconds. So sometimes travel doesn't matter. Sometimes it does.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe some adventure happened in between time. Maybe. We don't know. They don't say. So when they get to the Talaxian system, they get to the moon, and B'Elanna Torres beams up in a container. Not like that, unlike the container we saw in our last episode.
Exactly. Very similar container.
And they beam up it's part of the atmosphere, which has some of those isotopes. And she's like, basically, go ahead, take your sample and do what you will with it. So he goes off to the sick bay, and this is where the doctor asks Gentrell if he needs his assistance, and he tells him no, and he deactivates him.
And meanwhile is where Neelix comes to terms with his own personal issues.
Very interesting. So Neelix basically confesses to Kes that he had never actually he avoided military service because he disagreed with it, and she was like, well, you know, it wasn't, he felt like a coward. He's like, and she was like, well, it's not totally coward, because you would have been executed because you dissented.
So you stayed alive so you can loosen up my buttons, babe.
No, she just meant right. Well,
loosen up my buttons.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Your references are so everywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I don't know where you're coming from. It's like a new day.
This is Dave 2.0 coming at you at Synthaholics.
I like
you. I've got the Kaylee plugin installed.
He didn't run away. I liked that because she pointed out the fact that I have no idea what you said, David. I'm just going to keep going.
I said I've got the Kaylee plugin installed.
Keep going. Keep going, Holly. Keep going.
So
what I'm saying is meaningless.
I loved how she did point out the fact that he was facing death by diverting, mm-hmm. which made him brave because he was standing up for what he felt was right because he didn't think that the war was right. So that's why he avoided it. And she had a good point. Now, I wouldn't say that that's like a lesson to live by, but, you know, it was a good point. And I thought she did a good job at trying to console him and ultimately getting him to acknowledge his faults and his strengths.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing. But she pointed out maybe one of the things, reasons why you hate Gentrell is because you hate part of yourself and he brings this out of you.
Right.
You know, which is a good point. I mean, obviously, Gentrell has, you know, to answer for his crimes one way or the other. You know, he killed a lot of people. So
his government, the military killed a lot of people. He just worked in a laboratory.
And it was an interesting, man, what an interesting, probably the most, to me, was the most strongest part of this whole story was when Gentrell and Neelix have an exchange of what happened. Mm-hmm. And basically says when I came back and I looked for, he talked about how his wife, you know, rejected him, called him a monster and took his three kids away. Mm-hmm. And then Neelix is like, well, I came back to the moon of Riddex and I dealt with,
you held know, a burning child in my arms,
basically. And we tried to bring, her back and it was a, you know, and Gentrell cries,
yeah,
you know, and, I got to say, just crying through that makeup must be pretty difficult.
Oh, he was a great actor. The guy that got to play Gentrell, he was absolutely amazing. Star Trek gets some really good one-off characters that guest star on the show.
Absolutely. So we see that he says, you know, me saying sorry or apologizing for what I did could never really actually mean anything.
Right. And that's why I don't try, which is noble. I mean, when you know there's nothing you can do, when you apologize, like, I don't know, it's just the way I feel. Like, when you apologize for something that you can't change, like, it's only then an insult.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it is one thing to apologize, and there's one thing about forgiveness, but, I mean, he did kill a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard to even write. It's not like, you know, sorry, I, you know, did this. I, you know, I bumped into your car, and I dented your fender kind of thing. It's more, it's like a much bigger,
way bigger scale.
Yeah. Way bigger scale.
So Neelix goes to visit him in the sick bay.
Yes.
And he gets inoculated to sleep because Gentrell's up to something.
He has some weird, so he synthesized this, atmosphere that he took and somehow it makes this flesh that's actually almost like moving and alive. Or some kind of organic matter.
This is where species 8472 came from.
Mm-hmm. Reanimator kind of stuff. So, interesting stuff. And like you said, he deactivates the doctor. He knocks out Neelix, and then they realize that there's something wrong.
Right.
He goes to the transporter room, and he's trying to transport the people from the planet and put them back together again, like a Frankenstein.
Tuvok and Janeway show up, he shows them his equations, his research, and she's like, it's never going to work. It's never going to happen. It's just their signals and all the stuff is just too scattered. There's no way we're going to get together. But
Neelix begs her to let him try.
Yeah, please let him try. So we find out that and Janeway's right. That it's just too much for their transporter system to actually beam up and try to reconstruct a person. We see the inkling, the start of something happening.
they get 50% of a person. And it's just like a shadowy figure. Then it just kind of goes away. But they were saying like systems were going to blow out. It would have been nice if like they tried to get something to blow to make that scene a little bit more exciting. That there was like some kind of stakes. But they were just like going, oh, it's going to blow, and they just turn it off. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
I feel like they could have tried slightly harder or made it slightly more dramatic in that scene.
Did you happen to mention that Jatrell is the one who actually has the illness?
I was just thinking about that because obviously right then he dies or he collapses. And so Jentrell, we find out previously that he has this disease and there's no curing it. It's so advanced that it's happening right now.
And Neelix actually does not have the disease, much to our misfortune. But Neelix does find it in his heart to forgive Jentrell and annoys him at his deathbed until he dies. The end.
Actually, it was a touching scene. But last week I went with Holly. Dave, this week, what did you think about Jentrell?
You know, when you pitched doing an Neelix episode, I was shuddering in fear because I was like, oh, this is going to be the worst episode. It's also season one of Voyager. I'm like, oh, it's going to be bad. And I didn't. It was actually pretty good. It was kind of nice. It's kind of like a World War II type story where, like, you know, maybe some Japanese people might have gotten angry at, you know, the people in America who developed the atom bomb, who like decimated two of their cities, you know, like just it just kind of reminded me. I don't know if there's any specific story, but it seems like a story that could have happened where, like, you know, people held it against like a specific scientist after, you know, people moved over here or whatever, just held it against some certain scientist. Well,
absolutely. Mm. I mean, we can just go right back to Robert Oppenheimer. Robert Oppenheimer obviously made the the statement, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, saying, "I've become death, destroyer of worlds."
And this is
a whole requiem on Robert Oppenheimer. I mean, it's all about him.
Yeah, exactly. It just seems like it's a very thing out of World War II. It's an weapon of mass destruction. It had those kind of chimes to it, as far as like how the story went, and you know, there's some forgiveness, and you know, the atom bomb was an inevitability. Someone would have figured it out no matter what. It's just, it's very analogous to Oppenheimer, I believe. And so I thought, I thought that was a lot of fun, that it was like, you know, very, you know, paralleling a real thing. And it was ultimately a story about forgiveness and, you know, being the, you know, finding it in your heart to forgive someone who's created a horrible atrocity, even though, you know, they didn't drop it. They just invented it. But, you know, it's kind of weird to harbor that against, because, you know, nuclear power also has, you know, it's a nuclear power. We got, you know, power plants that run on this, you know, discovery. So,
yeah, it was the huge issue during World War II was like, who was going to develop the atomic weapon? Was it going to be the Soviets? Was it going to be the Americans, or was it going to be the Nazis? And the Nazis were very far ahead in their rocket technology. That's why we obviously used a lot of the, Nazi scientists. We brought a lot of Germans into America after World War II to develop our Apollo space program. But the Americans, you know, beat the Russians. But the Russians were not far behind with figuring out the atomic splitting the atom.
Mm-hmm. So it was definitely an inevitability. So I thought that was interesting, and it's very analogous to art history, which was, I thought was interesting. And it made me not hate Neelix. And Neelix, you know, Ethan Phillips did some very good dramatic acting in this episode.
Yeah.
He's a very good character actor. I just wish Neelix was a better character the rest of the time.
Yeah, Holly, what did you think of this episode?
I didn't think it was terrible, but I thought it was kind of bland. And I don't know what I mean by that, but that's just kind of how it left me feeling. I did like how they kind of showed, like, you know, it wasn't about, like, Janeway, but it showed her quick willingness to just do what's right, which was cool. And it happened quickly. I think earlier you mentioned that it wasn't really specific in the time it took to travel, but, I mean, at that point, we were still under the impression that Neelix could die within a couple of days. So I don't think it took very long. I don't know. I liked that. And I liked, you know, that her crew was just like, okay, your orders. Let's do it. And they tried, and yeah, it failed, and that sucked. But sometimes it's nice to have a story that doesn't have a happy ending.
Sure.
And I don't know. I thought it was okay. Like, eh, I don't know.
It's great, because I love how Holly didn't have any expectations of it. And so she's like, yeah, it's a mess. But Aaron and I had such low expectations that we came out, oh, it was way better, than we thought.
That's how it goes, isn't it? Really? I mean, it's like when you really, like, sometimes like you're like, this is going to be such a shit like TV show or movie. And then it was okay. It was actually watchable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I know I've seen this episode before.
Yeah, I've seen
it. So I don't know. Maybe it was just kind of like, oh, I've seen this already. Maybe that influenced my blasé attitude toward it. I don't know. Right. It wasn't terrible. And like you guys said, the acting was pretty good. I didn't really like how, I don't know, people do things differently when they're grieving. And obviously he's still grieving his people. But I don't know. You always like to envision yourself in the situation that the characters are in. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. I definitely would not have acted the way Neelix acted.
How do you figure? I mean, they explain further.
Just like...
like yelling at him for developing the weapon.
It just dragged on the entire episode.
We didn't lose his family.
Yes, but I understand.
They're lesser like people.
Like I said, everybody's different, and you react to things differently. And I'm different. I'm a little weird about death, but I just, you know, your life is on the line, and he doesn't even consider to hear the guy out. To, you know, he's telling you that his whole goal is to make up for what he did by curing this disease. And granted, he's sitting there in front of you, and he's still saying he didn't think that he did anything wrong. So, obviously, you'd be pissed off, too. But, I don't know. It just felt like with the...
You feel like you'd be a better listener than Neelix, is what you're saying.
Kind of.
Because Neelix is not a very good listener.
You know, you have to read the people in the room. And it just felt like he wasn't... You know, he was... Granted, he was... caught up in his mind about all of his lies and all that. So I don't know. I just.
Would you have lied to Cass about your military exploits?
I fucking hate lying.
Yeah.
So, I thought you were going to say I fucking hate Cass. So I was like, oh, okay, good.
No, I don't do lies. And maybe that kind of was off-putting about the episode, because a lot of it was about lying. So,
well, yeah, but it's lies we tell to ourselves, you know, like we to get through our life, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I just made a blog post about being your own worst enemy, basically, and talking shit to yourself and telling yourself a bunch of lies that you don't really genuinely believe, but like that's how anxiety is, right?
Everyone does that one way or the other. Some people drag ourselves down. Some people puts ourselves up, and we're lying to ourselves. Absolutely.
What about you, Aaron? What are your thoughts on Gentrell?
Yes, take it away, Aaron.
Gentrell, the Oppenheimer thing was just over the top. I mean, obviously Gentrell is Robert Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is an extremely interesting character. If you ever want to like just look into it, just read his Wikipedia page. He is not what you think he is. He's a person who is nothing like you think. He doesn't agree with the war. It was basically the military and Roosevelt that were pushing him to develop the atomic bomb during World War II. And he didn't really agree with any of it. I mean, obviously he did it because, you know,
he was told to. And
like Gentrell says, sooner or later, somebody was going to develop it. It was just a question of who, and who did you want to have the finger on the button for that kind of thing? So
who'd you want doing the math?
Yeah, it was a very interesting. Oppenheimer is just a very interesting character. I just reading his parts of his Wikipedia page, and read the whole thing because it's pretty pretty in depth. He'd be a great guy just to read an autobiography about, or not autobiography, which is biography. I'm sure he didn't write an autobiography. Anyways,
be an interesting read is what you're saying.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's
too bad he wasn't an Instagram star vlogging all his stuff while he was developing the, you know, the bomb.
It is too bad. Here, me is splitting the atom. And Trinity test site in Los Alamos.
Selfie. Atom bomb selfie. I'm here's part of the mushroom cloud.
Here's me with the Enola Gay dropping on Hiroshima. Yeah, so that's it's interesting. And the other side of it was I hate Neelix so bad.
How bad do you hate Neelix?
So bad. But actually, this episode, I don't hate Neelix. It's strange that because we said let's pick a Voyager episode, and I was like, we haven't done one on Neelix, and I don't know. I guess I picked this one not remembering that I actually enjoyed this episode, because it's been a while since I've watched it, and I really enjoyed this episode quite a bit going back to it. Yeah. I thought it was the acting. So the guy who plays Gentrell is James Joseph Soling. And he's played a whole host of characters for the Star Trek universe. Yeah, he's played a Klingon.
He did seem familiar.
Yeah, he's played a Klingon, he's played a Bajoran, he's played a Romulan. So I mean he's in a ton of different things. He's in Next Generation and DS9. And a whole bunch of other things. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. He's also in X-Files. And Dave, he's in Buck Rogers.
Oh, maybe that's where I recognize him from. Because I did binge-watch Buck Rogers those 2 years ago. And I was getting ready to talk with Aaron Gray.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, so he's in a lot of stuff. So, anyways, it was one of those... he's a very competent actor. And like I said, just that scene between him and Neelix... really, really well done.
Very good character actor moments. Very, very good.
Yeah, and I don't know. I guess, you know, the thing with Ethan Phillips is that I do think he's a good actor. I just hate the character. You know what I mean?
Exactly what I said earlier. I mean, he's a great character actor. I just wish the character was a decent character.
I just never got into Neelix. He just annoyed me. But here's another thing. Go ahead, Holly. What were you going
to
say?
I just feel like he's supposed to be annoying.
I guess you're right.
That's his point.
I guess you're right.
No, yeah. He was supposed to be like the cool, new, unique alien. They were pitching him up to be super interesting and they pitched him as this like really cool guy, and then like they wrote him like a doofus. I'm just saying, like, back when the show was coming out, they were pitching him as like this really cool new alien, and he's going to be on the show. He's a regular on the show, and like that he was going to be an interesting character. And then it turned out they just made him a doofus.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, I definitely wasn't paying attention to that when the show came out, and so I don't know how they were pitching it. But I just feel like when you meet him, he's like obnoxious and purposefully annoying, like. It was fun for him to be annoying.
Yeah,
but it's also how it was written, though.
Yeah,
you do have acting choices, but if your character is written obnoxious, you're going to play it as obnoxious as possible.
That's true.
I mean,
one of the things I always thought with Neelix is that he plays the archetype of the fool or the clown, and which is an interesting thing because they're shapeshifters. They can. You know, they turn things on their head. So when you think of one thing, it's the next thing, or it's something you never thought of before.
Gangway Crest grinding on him. Never would have thought that would happen.
Yeah, we never thought that would happen. But what was I going to say? So Neelix is an interesting character in that right. I never liked him. He kind of wore on me. And I didn't like Kes as a character either. I didn't like their relationship, I guess. That's what it just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Anyways, but he's a very good actor, and I really did enjoy it quite a bit. I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the story of Oppenheimer seen in like, you know, told in a different light. Mm-hmm. So this is what I want to get back with Neelix is that the idea of him trying to mask his pain, mask his discomfort by being an entertainer. He tells Cassie's crazy stories, true mm-hmm. or not. And this is something we see with Neelix constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, he tries to divert them from what's really going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
This is the true essence of an entertainer, of the clown who tries to make you laugh and make you think of something different, you know,
mm-hmm.
try to redirect you almost as a magic trick. And that's the one thing I never really thought about that with Neelix before. And this is, you know, now that we've been doing the podcast for, as we said, for so many years, I really thought about this. It's like, this is what Neelix is. He's that entertainer who makes you change your mind or gets you off of what you should be focusing on and focuses on something else. So you're not, I don't have that ability. You know, I'm more like, you know, this is where I'm at right now. I'm pissed off. I'm happy. I'm sad, whatever, you know, this is where mm-hmm. I'm at. And I could never do that. It's not in me. But obviously Neelix is like, this is his talent. This is what he does. He moves off. He gets you to think of something else while mm-hmm. he misdirects your intentions or thoughts. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was a fascinating look at it. I guess a character study of him. So
yeah, it was. It was interesting, especially so early on. Until we don't get more introspective things like that. Later on, we get him being jealous of Cass and Tom, and even though nothing happened.
Right.
Which is not a super attractive episode for him.
No. That's the problem. It's like, I think this is maybe one of his highlight episodes.
Early on, yeah. I mean, because this is season one, so this episode kind of did move on that promise of him being an interesting character, and then they just kind of fell away from it.
Well, it's like the Marvel character Magneto. It's like when you find out that he's a Holocaust survivor, you know, you're sort of just like, well, I understand why he wants to kill all humanity now, you know.
He's you know, angry? Like, I wonder why.
I wonder why you killed his family. Oh, okay, I get it. So you become instantly sympathetic towards him.
Mm. I like sympathetic villains.
And Magneto's a great one for that. But Neelix... it definitely is sympathetic here, and we have him like we're like, oh my god, the pain you must be just harboring constantly within you, and yet we never see it.
Yeah,
and I don't know if we see it again. I mean, Dave, do we see this come up? I don't remember seeing it much more than this.
I feel like it does come up once or twice with him. I can't put names on episodes, but I feel like his family stuff comes up before. I think it came up in the episode we had with Larry Nemechek, because he saw his like dead sister because he had started having nightmares.
He started having
nightmares about the afterlife.
You're right about that.
Naomi at Wild Bennett. So it's at least that episode.
I've seen that episode.
It's at least that episode it comes up again. And I want to say it probably comes up again more. I can't remember the name of the episode off the top of my head, but we did it back when Faith was on the show back like early, like season one. It was like the second time we had Larry on, I think.
Yeah, right. So, anyways, for a Neelix hater, I like this episode.
Yeah, it really wasn't bad.
So,
I don't hate Neelix.
Yeah, it's everyone has their own opinion. He never did anything for me, and this episode made him feel so much more interesting.
See, that's why we're so glad we have you on the show, Holly, because you like, I don't hate that, I think. I don't hate that. And so you give a different perspective than what me and Aaron can provide.
Well, and it's interesting. Holly is like, yeah, this is kind of a boring episode. And I'm like thinking,
wow,
you know,
this is a good episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, so we totally, but it's good because
completely different experiences.
Yes.
See, totally different because me and Aaron would be agreeing with everything and that would be boring. And then Holly throws the wrench into it and says, no, I thought this about it. So I was like, huh, it makes us reevaluate things. So it's great. We're so glad you're here. We're so glad you're here, Holly.
Thanks.
You can put us in perspective. This episode's horrible. Thanks, Holly.
Well, next time I think something is horrible, I'll come armed with all of my bullet points.
Oh, sweet. Then maybe me and Aaron will love it. That'd be great.
I know. You'll be like, you guys are fucking morons.
Yes.
Right.
That's what we specialize in.
Nice. Good one, Dave.
I do what I can. I know. So that's kind of it for Jatrell. I think we've said as much as we can say about it.
It is interesting for me.
So one thing I want to put out there is Discovery's coming up soon. What I'm kind of, we haven't had guests on the show in a while, and I'm trying to line up people for Discovery season 2 to come be guests on the show. Hopefully for every episode, may not actually turn to pass, and I really want to do the season 2 recap with Trek Yards again. So I've reached out to a couple people already, and we've got, I think, the first 3 episodes filled, so I might be reaching out some more people, not like huge guests, but just having a fourth person on the show just to get more input since Discovery's coming back, and it'd be great to have another, have each episode be slightly more roundtable discussion-y. Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think about that? Let us know on the Facebook group. You can find that at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. All our music is provided by Warp Love, and you can find that at warplove.com or Warp Love on Twitter. Except for our intro, that's by Dave Wilkes. You can reach out to us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can tweet at us. The show is at Synthaholic Duo. I'm at David_J_Duncan. Holly's at Blackbird2004. And
Holly is not it.
No, Aaron's at Blackbird2004.
Please tweet Holly at Blackbird2004.
Yeah. All the dick pics are coming to you now, Aaron.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's not like anybody tweets me anyway. It's fine.
Finally.
Sweet. And then, and Holly's Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and view us there. Give us 5 stars and make a comment that helps other people see us on the iTunes algorithm. Also, if you have any money that you could throw us away, $1 a month's not much to ask. Go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics. Throw us $1 a month. Help us keep us the show going towards giving you another fine content, especially with the Discovery coming up. And lastly, as always, please tell your friends, your coworkers, people who you know that listen to podcasts,
complete
strangers about Synthaholics. Let them know about us. Let them know that this is a fun podcast to listen to. We try to make it interesting. We try to get into a little bit of the dirt of what the shows are about.
And I try to be the Henry Zebrowski of the Star Trek podcast world.
Nice.
Does that mean dirty?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
I agree with this statement.
Yeah.
Henry Zebrowski's from last podcast on the left. He's the dirty one. So yeah. I try to fill that role in the show.
Right. And you do well.
Thank you.
But yeah, let everyone know that that, you know, if they're into Star Trek and sci-fi, we don't just do Star Trek, we do other sci-fi as well. So
absolutely. Although we'll be doing a lot of Discovery back to back, but we'll try to do something not Discovery before it starts and more after it's over. So
absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Aaron and Holly. We had some news, we had some short treks, and we had some Neelix treks.
It was an action-packed show.
Action-packed. Lots of topics.
I am exhausted by this action-packedness.
Well, so we had to do a second take, so...
Yeah.
It was so action-packed.
It was so action-packed. We got so flabbergasted. We had to start over.
David was saying all sorts of horrible things, and those probably will not be in the outtakes. Other things will be in the outtakes, because...
I like how he says probably.
Yes. Probably.
For those who want the flubbed first take of me saying horrible things...
You can pay for it Patreon. On Patreon.
Yeah, exactly. I'll probably put that on Patreon. Maybe I'll put that at $2 here. I don't know. But I don't know. That'll probably go to Patreon. Thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Totally wanted to say jinx at you, Aaron, because we were both said the Patreon at the same time.
I know, right?
Because I think my M&M joke is on the first take.
Yeah, there were some good bits on the first take.
You can use it again.
There.
Oh no, we don't do that around here.
Oh. Just put some whiskey on your finger and rub it on their gums.
They're a little old enough.
Yeah.
A little too old for the gum rubbing.
Yeah, for the gum rubbing.
That's a teething thing.
They're too young for the shots. So, I mean, I figured gum rubbing works until, you know, they're old enough to drink.
Yeah, no, they're really picky about what you put on their gums.
Freaking kids that can speak to you will sell you to F off if you try to put Orajel in their mouth. They're like, oh my God. Bitch, no.
Orajel's awesome. Makes your mouth all tingly.
Yeah, how about anything? How about even vegetables?
How about Metreon radiation? I mean, come on. I mean, everyone likes some Metreon radiation in their mouth. Metreon. Can't be too bad.
Yeah, that's right.
Or some Jitrell in their mouth. That's kind of creepy.
Some
yeah. Yeah, some Jitrell in their mouth. With his nose that wrinkly, I wonder what his dick looks like. It's probably scary.
It's funny that you say that, because I was thinking.
Holly, you were thinking about what his dick looked like, too? That's interesting.
No, but
I watched the other Trek short.
He had a sex dream about him.
No, and I was just looking at the different makeup between the generations of Kelpians, and I kind of noticed a similar thing. Like, the older generation, they're not as wrinkly, but they, like, their prosthetics aren't as noticeably wrinkly and old like a human would age. So I looked at that when I watched the Voyager episode, because I was looking at the difference in prosthetics and stuff. I don't know. That was my thought on that whole wrinkly thing. It had nothing to do with penises.
Oh, sure. Your fake cover isn't fooling me at all, Holly.
That was a really long.
That was a long fake cover.
That was fake.
Yes, that's how you know it's fake, because it went on for so long.
On the record, it was not fake.
This is all recorded.
It's all funny.
All recorded. Outtake fodder. In case we don't have any outtake fodder for later. Did you get to see the short Trek, Aaron?
Yes, I did.
Sweet. So we can talk about.
Oh yeah.
The brightest star.
We can totally talk about that.
And how
it's a hot garbage.
That's the best one of the three, but it's still kind of hot garbage. Yes.
I know. I watched. I didn't see the one with Tilly, but I saw the one with Calypso. And
that was
just
awful.
Like,
sweet. We can talk about short Treks now. They're so bad.
Do we have to?
Opinion, I didn't hate the second one.
The Calypso?
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was pointless.
It was completely pointless. If there was any kind of hints to what happens to Discovery, like who the crew was, who the captain, anything, but no, there was nothing. It was utter garbage.
Well, that did suck. I agree that, like, you were left wondering why the F the ship was there for 1,000 years.
And how it didn't get destroyed or noticed by anyone else. How'd the ship treat him without anyone there to treat him? Like, Next Gen ship isn't the Enterprise D isn't that advanced. The Discovery is. It doesn't make any sense. None of it did.